Welcome to the You Need More Money podcast. I'm your host, Matt Manero, where I come to you each and every week from my studio in Dallas, Texas. We got a millennial sausage fest going on in my studio right now. We never had this many people in the studio, and I bet if I add up most of your ages, I'm still the oldest guy in the damn room. How old are you guys? Nathan, how old are you?
21.
Michael?
20. 27.
How old are you, Billy?
31.
Ulysses, how old are you?
21.
You're 21. Holy mackerel. This is something else. I'm like a fish out of water for the first time in a long time, but that's exactly where I like to be. My guest today is Ulysses Osana. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Dude, I'm happy that we reached out. I mean, it's interesting. I've watched you do great stuff. I've watched you do what you're doing as a PR expert. And then now all of a sudden our paths cross. You're in town for Ryan Stueman's event.
Yep.
That happens, started yesterday, you're speaking today.
Yep.
What are you talking about?
PR.
What about it?
So today, like specifically what I'm talking about is that about like a year and a half ago, we helped somebody out with like very little online presence at all. And we essentially created this persona that he sold a business for $100 million. And he's a 21-year-old kid that sold a business for $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now what I didn't know at the time is like he really didn't sell a business for $100 million, but yet we got him on every single publication. Pretty much everything imaginable saying that he did, and because of that, in the span of like 3 months, he was able to charge thousands for like consulting and all that type of stuff. So today I'm going to talk about like the power of the media and how if positioned correctly with, you know, the correct people, you can actually leverage that to your advantage.
Yeah, but dude, that's an interesting story. Like I didn't think that's where you were going with that story just now. I thought where you were going to go was the guy turned out to not have a truthful story, and the marketplace kicked his ass and pushed him out and looked at him as a fraud. That's not the storyline. That's not how
it
went.
It's definitely not a truthful story, but the marketplace didn't know that, right? So if nobody else knew that except for the person that helped him get to that position, then I had to pretty much like apologize to every single person that we ever got him on, right? So. But to everybody else, to the world, it seemed very legit. And obviously there was the critics and stuff like that, but when a big prestigious publication is stating that this kid sold his company, like you can hate all you want, but if that media publication says that, you're almost gonna believe it. Like it's almost naturally.
Dude, it's like what you're talking about is really unusual to me. Like and I'm trying to get my head around how you feel about that, because I know what your job is and your skill set is, which is to make brands and to get exposure. But, like, dude, I worked my balls off for 18 years before, really 20 years before I even did a Facebook post, because I was so afraid that we didn't have the credibility that I thought would get us attention. And now you're telling me that a guy who didn't have the credibility got attention in this really narrow, short span of, what'd you say, 18 months?
3 months.
3 months, and I wasted 20 years, and I was doing something real.
Yeah.
So I don't understand. Where are we going? Are you kind of thumbs up, or are you thumbs down on that story?
It was definitely a thumbs down, but we were able to turn that into a thumbs up, because now it's a great story to tell. And now what I realized through that is that my ideal client is probably not, because for the longest time we've been serving the influencer, like people like you. But our ideal client now is somebody that has built that massive company and like wants to come to light.
Yeah.
Because then it's truthful, right? Yeah. Then they have that business.
Well, the truth helps in storytelling. Yeah.
So we can take them from point zero to the end goal.
All right. So you're a public relations expert. And why did you choose this platform? Because my experience with PR guys is, and I probably spent 30 grand on PR guys, people, more than that, definitely more than that. And the results have been mediocre. PR kind of has a bad rap. So what made you choose that platform?
I got into it by accident. So when I was first doing online marketing, I was doing general online marketing, website design, maybe capturing emails, that type of stuff. So when
funnel
I was doing
stuff.
That, right. Yeah, pretty much. And then, so when I got into that, I was writing for these big publications because I was doing that general online marketing stuff. And somebody told me I can make money off of it. So the next day, I made the easiest $2,000 I've ever made. And then that first week, I made $16,000. So
what did you do for the $2,000 and the $16,000?
I helped him get on an entrepreneur piece. And because I was a writer at Entrepreneur, it's a lot easier because you're in the same space, right? All I have to do is hit up my friend and be like, hey, this is a great story. What do you think? And be like, yeah, I would love to write about it. And then somebody paid me the money, made the introduction, and it was the easiest work I've ever had to do in my life for $2,000. So after I made my first $16,000 that first week, I was like, you know what? This is just what I want to do. The money's here, and it directly aligns with like who I feel I am. Mm. I personally love being able to work with, you know, people like you, people like Bedros, people like Ed, where I feel like I get to work with the best of the best, and I get that like that respect for the work. And I agree with you, or I agree with you when you say like, yeah, you've hired, you know, other PR specialists and the work is mediocre. But the reason why I try not to be that mediocre is because my entire reason of like why I'm even doing entrepreneurship is because I feel like, or I want to become like the one, like the guy essentially. Like
okay, the best.
Yeah, the best, right? So if in order for me to become the best, I need to make sure that my results like are there, that my clients are the best. Like everything has to align with who I am as a person.
The problem with PR people is they don't have a system. And so me as the client, you never know whether you're in the ecosystem of their effort or you're out.
Right.
And that's the problem, because when you're in the ecosystem, you're getting booked. And then when the next client comes on, maybe they pay more, I don't know, maybe they just have to deliver for that client to get make sure that there's a couple more months of revenue coming in, and you're out of the ecosystem, the deal slowed down. So everything in my world is looked at as a pipeline.
Yeah.
And even with vendors. And so if I hired a PR person, I would say to them, well, tell me what my pipeline is. What do you got working for me? You got CNN? What do you got? Because I know we got to have more hooks in the water to be able to land more gigs 30, 60, 90 days down the road. And when I didn't see the pipeline, I would say, well, you're obviously not giving me the intensity that I'm looking for.
And that's so true. And, and we've had to learn that as well. Like when I first started out, my communication between me and the client was like the hardest thing. Because first of all, I was a solopreneur, so all I was doing is just working on the client.
Yeah.
And then I would struggle to communicate what I was doing for the client. And then, so just that in itself was like a barrier. But now we've gotten it down to, like my first mentor taught me all about systems, all about delegating. Like you either, what do you have to do yourself? What can you delegate? What can you delete?
Who was the mentor?
Sterling Griffin.
I don't know that.
So, yeah, he essentially went from like $20,000 a month in January to like by the end of the year making $400,000 a month.
Doing what?
Fitness coaching.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know that fella at all. Does he have a big following?
Not really.
Really?
Yeah, not that big of a following, but what he learned like through scaling his fitness company is not necessarily like the fitness side of it, but the business side of it. And because of that, he was able to transfer that to me. Mm. So like resources, like if you get a question asked more than once, then you know it's going to be a resource because they're going to ask that again.
Yeah, for sure.
So
yeah.
Just things of that sort, like standard operating procedures and
all right, let's get a couple things out of the way. The first thing is that we both agree that attention matters.
Yes.
That is a Cardone dealio, occurred through his book, The 10X Rule. Prior to that, I was fighting against it. In fact, I had a marketing manager in this office who used to tell me, we need more attention and you got to get in front of this business. And I would say, if you ever tell me that again, I'm going to fire your ass. And he would ride me and say, when are you going to get in front of this business? I said, didn't you hear me last time? I'm not getting in front of this business. I'm not the face of the business. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
And finally, I fired him.
Yeah.
And said, stop asking me, do your damn job. And he said, I can't do my job unless you get out in front of this business and be the face of the business.
Yeah.
And he was right, and I was wrong. So are we both on the same page that attention matters?
100%.
So now we got to figure out, though, who, because there's so many people who read that 10X rule, which is my favorite book of all time, and they get it wrong. And so they end up like pushing on a string trying to get attention. And dude, you and I can just go through our memory banks over the last 3-4 years of Cardone disciples who started to do what he said, which was get attention. So they were on Periscope and they're on all over lives and streaming and all that sort of stuff. And it ends up going no place and they quit.
Yeah.
So how do you bridge this gap? If we know that attention matters, how the hell do we get it?
So the thing that I always tell like my clients in the beginning is you need to know what exactly, like what is your end goal? Like if you get that attention, what are you going to do with it? Because attention without intention sucks.
Okay.
By the way, just made that up on the spot.
What was it? Intention without
attention without intention
sucks?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Good for you.
Catchy,
I like that.
Catchy phrase.
All right.
So, but it's true because if you don't know like who it is that you want to be seen as, you know, in the perfect light of your customer and all that type of stuff, then any type of press that you go after is worthless.
It's really hard though, dude. What you're saying is that people need to develop their storyline and their opinion and their persona before they maybe even know who it is, because that's why you got so many people hitting the red button and recording themselves, which my buddy Hank Norman says, just press record. I get it, but a lot of times I don't want to watch what you hit record and published because I don't know where you're going with it. What are you telling me? Why do I need to listen to you for 3 minutes, let alone 30 minutes? What am I going to get from you? And the downside is most people don't have much to give because they haven't done shit yet.
Yeah.
How do we overcome that? The guy says, I need attention, but I really haven't done much.
You're right. And in this day and age, like, there's so much attention. There's so much noise.
Yeah.
From people that also haven't done much. Like, so yeah, you're right, and you're fighting for that, but I think you have it easier because you built that reputation. So if you ever, which you have already, you know, came to light, then people automatically just flock to you.
But I have it harder, okay. And let me tell you why.
Yeah.
Because it's a low-value activity for me. In other words, without RevGen, it's a low-value activity. So for me, it's actually harder because I say to myself, why do I want to do that? All I got to do is go to my office and make 500 times more money than writing books and go home to my kids and watch them play football and love on my wife and go to bed early and get up early and do my morning routine. I don't have to do any of it. So it's harder because I'm on the other side that says, well, I understand time.
Yep.
And it's actually harder for that. So I have to find my own versions of competitors, which, you know, I know the deal about competing against yourself, and I'm a huge believer in that. But I got to look at a guy like Mylett or Frizella, and I got to say, you know, how did nobody know Mylett 18 months ago? And now he's probably top 10 influencers on social media.
Yep.
Right? What did he do? And when I analyze that, I always come back to the fact of they push out a shitload more content than we do. They grind it harder than we do. They actually don't take the way out that I said. They look at it as high-value activity instead of low-value activity. Help me work through what I'm telling you here because I really struggle with it.
I've mentioned this as well. Like not here, but I've mentioned this when I've talked to other people. Like, yeah, you're completely right. 18 months ago, nobody knew about Ed Mylett. When we closed them as a client, I didn't know who Ed Mylett was.
Mm-hmm.
So like it wasn't, but when you take a look at what he's done, when he started off in the beginning, he started off with Grant, with Andy, like he's doing stuff with the top people in their space. And one of the best ways to be one of the people at the top is just to be recognized in that circle. Then automatically when people follow you, they're just gonna see you in that light.
Yeah.
So you're if you're another Andy, if you're another Ty, if you're another Grant or whatever, they're gonna find you in that same light and they're gonna follow you regardless. It comes with the love, with the hate. But he positioned himself correctly from the beginning. He didn't have to climb that corporate ladder to influence.
Yeah.
Right? The other people gave that to him.
You're right. He did do that. He basically started connected with the right people for a social media influencer status.
Yes.
You're right about that. And that is a hell of a lot easier than doing it without that, you know? So it's an interesting thing. I want to go back to a couple notes here that I have, one of which is there are so many ways to get attention now that didn't exist 23 years ago when I started my business, right? I mean, literally, it was billboards, it was television, it was radio. Now we can do it in so many ways. So let's rank them, if you don't mind, in your level of expertise. I'm going to ask you the question. How would you rank social versus TV versus podcast versus radio versus print? And under print, I have blogs, articles, and contributor status. So help me rank those if you would.
Okay, cool.
Unless you got more to add.
No, this is great. So first thing would be print.
Print would be number one.
And I'm talking about mainly like online articles. And the reason for that is because, first of all, we started off with that. But second of all, is because I know that once you get the print, that will be the pillar pieces for everything else.
Mm.
So you can use print to get yourself on podcasts, to get yourself on radio, to get yourself on TV, to leverage on social. Because nobody cared about me when I was doing online marketing stuff. It wasn't until I started becoming a writer for these publications where social became a lot easier for me.
I think I left something off on print. It really should say books, too.
Books?
you know, because books do matter, right?
Print articles, blogs, you know, contributor status, this is the in for everything else. So, and that's like a main driver of like what I believe in. After that, it would be social.
It would.
Because social, you can connect with pretty much almost anybody, right? Back then, you know this, like we wouldn't be able to connect. So a simple Facebook message from me to you, you reply to me, yeah. Boom, I have that in, right?
Okay.
But the reason I say print is very important is because if I didn't have the credibility, or if I didn't have that perceived credibility, then somebody like you, somebody like a bigger player, wouldn't give me that time of day. And I noticed that before I was ever a writer for these publications, I would message the same people. Right? I'd message the same people, but they wouldn't give me the time of day because I wasn't worthy of their time of day.
Dude, listen, that happens all the time, and it's the worst damn thing because, and I'll tell you straight up, I struggle with that because, you know, there was a point in my career a couple years ago where I stopped going to a lot of these conferences and stuff.
Yeah.
Because I would sit in the audience and I would say, when am I going to stop being the student? And when am I going to start being the damn teacher? Mm. Because most of the people that are at those things aren't as good as me when it comes to certain things. Like I went to the Jocko Willink muster. You know what that is?
I don't.
So, do you know who Jocko Willink is?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
He's the Navy SEAL. He wrote the book Extreme Ownership, and he just came out with a new book, A Dichotomy of Leadership. Dude, you'd look up Jocko Willink.
I have that book.
Yeah. Well, that's Jocko Willink.
Yeah. Okay.
He's unbelievable. I mean, when you look up Navy SEAL in the dictionary, it's like his face.
Yeah.
He's like the ultimate persona of what a Navy SEAL is. And his career is absolutely blown up. And he puts on these things called musters. They're basically his conference. And they're incredible, man. When he talks about his war stories in Ramadi and Iraq. And, I mean, just the brotherhood and how he's transitioned from military experience to corporate leadership and how many similarities there are. But when they talk about cash flow gen of a business, like, they're not so good.
Yeah.
Right? How do you grow the business? That's the one thing that people never really understand about Navy SEALs. As much as I have unbelievable respect for those guys, I never served my country. I'm a wuss when it comes to that. I swim in a cold water pool in the morning for like 8 minutes and I think I'm a Navy SEAL, right? It's such bullshit, right? I mean, it's even to put myself in that category is unfair to those guys. But what I've learned is that those guys are government employees. They don't know shit from Shinola about running a business.
Yeah.
And sooner or later, I had to begin to say, I could get up there and answer every one of these questions better than the guy on stage. When am I going to make that transition? And so when you have that confidence, just because you did it, and you can't get Vaynerchuk to care about. I'll give you a perfect Vaynerchuk story. Like 2 years ago when I first met him or got engaged with him,
yeah.
I just fell in love with his content. And I went out and I bought him, because he's a huge Jets fan. Do you know that about
Vaynerchuk?
Yes. He wants to buy the Jets. That's his long-term goal. And I bought him an authentic autographed Joe Namath Jets helmet. You know Joe Namath?
I don't.
Joe Namath was the quarterback who won the Super Bowl for the Jets in 1969. He's like the shit of
Got
the
it.
Jets. He's like the most legendary Jet guy. He walked off the field holding number one up. He told everybody before the game that they were going to win. Everyone was like, no way. They used to call him Broadway Joe. He'd wear these big, you know, fur collars, and he would drink and party and all that sort of stuff. And then he'd get on the field and kick everybody's ass.
Yeah.
Okay. And I sent that to Vaynerchuk. Do you know that son of a gun never sent me a thank you card? He never sent me a book. He never mentioned it one time. But if you watch Gary Vaynerchuk's videos, all Daily V's, all this shit, you look in the background, you know what's on that table? My freaking Jet helmet. The Joe Namath autographed Jet helmet that I sent to him in appreciation and respect. And the son of a gun never mentioned a word about it. I know I'm on a tangent here, but
no,
it's very disheartening when you know you've got some game, but you can't get those people's attention.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And that's why when this happened for me, like when it accidentally happened and I became a contributor and all that type of stuff, and I just saw my life became 10 times easier. I didn't have to knock through doors. Doors opened. I can talk to you. If I wanted to, you know, connect with somebody really powerful, all I needed to do was just interview them.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I was easily in that circle. They would let me in. But before that, it was a lot tougher. And when people give you the time of day, just naturally, like automatically, your success rate is going
to
increase.
Yeah, but I just had it happen. I mean, that's really one of the ways that we reconnected was you reached out to me and said, "Hey, I'd like to get this guy on the show. We don't need to mention his name." And you said, "No, he wouldn't agree
right.
to it." Another
right.
a perfect example of what I was just on the tangent about, right?
Yes.
So it's more than just having a podcast and a book and some exposure, right? There has to be this element of audience. And that's the hardest damn thing to get. So how do you get an audience that makes influencers say you're worthy of their audience?
Yeah.
I want to say, because, I mean, that's the game, right?
Yeah.
The only reason you want Vaynerchuk on the podcast is because maybe Vaynerchuk will post about it and you get to leverage his audience.
True. And we've also found, again, like that to me, like the publications thing is our in. Like about 2-3 days ago, we were in LA and we got to meet with like influencers with millions of followers, all because we were doing skits with them. We were, you know, recording content.
What's a skit?
Skits are like a, you know, very famous thing on like Instagram where people make funny videos, 40 seconds long. They get shared a ton of times and stuff like that. But our in is like we're creating an entrepreneur video, and because of that, we're gonna have you. We're gonna have other big influencers with millions of followers. And because of that, I get to leverage one name to the next one to the next one, and now I get their audience.
I know, but how do you, like in the guy that we're referencing?
Yes,
he like here's my stance on it. And by the way, I'm outrageously competitive.
Yeah.
So when you sent me that note and said it didn't work out, I was like, son of a bitch, who does that guy think he is? Right? He doesn't know what he's missing out on. But. I understand that if you go to my Instagram account and I have 12,000 followers and whoever this person is has 500,000, he's like, well, that's a low value activity for me, right?
Right.
So how do you jump? How do you make the leap? Because it's a bitch to go from. You can't organically go from 12,000 to 500,000 in any real time frame unless something outrageous happens.
Yeah. Unless you like buy your way in.
Yeah, right. Which I know for sure, and let's be straight about it. You don't have to reveal secrets, but I know most people have bought a crap load of followers. My shit is organic, and I get hit up all the time on my Instagram instant message where guys are like, hey, let's get you to 50,000 or 200,000 and all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, nah, I just like my followers the way it is. I just want to follow these 60 people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and even for podcasts as well, like you can buy your way in into like certain podcasts.
I've had people hit me up. You can buy your way into the top 10 and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, if it doesn't happen that way, it can happen another way, but obviously that's more, I think it's a little more inauthentic, but.
A little more? Come on,
yeah,
dude. It's totally inauthentic.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
a
scam job.
Yeah, you get to buy your way up to the top pretty much.
But stay with me on this. If I had 500,000 Instagram followers and 488,000 of them were fake, but it said 500,000, do you think that guy would have come on my podcast?
Probably, because, yes.
There it is. He wouldn't have researched to know whether 488,000 were fake.
No.
But it would have been 500,000. Does anyone go further and check the comments or the likes and say, wait a minute, this guy's got 500,000 followers and 4 people like his stuff and 2 people comment? It couldn't be real? Do people do that?
Yes. If it's that obvious, yeah, they can definitely check it out. But you can also pay for comments. You can pay for likes and all that. And I'm not an Instagram expert, so I probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference. Right? I'd go on there. I'd be like, oh, tons of followers. The engagement seems right. Perfect.
Did you know what I like about you? I think you kind of think that strategy is not a bad idea because
of buying.
Yeah, because it's so damn hard to get attention and to get to that level that buying your way into that actually might catapult you.
Well,
so that you can mess it, you can actually get heard.
Let's talk about that.
I
did buy that before, and right now I'm in the process where for the like the past 4 or 5 weeks it's been deleting my followers.
Because they've been doing it, or you?
No, my software. My software has been deleting the fake followers that I've had because I've done that before, and I've also bought my way up to the top in the beginning, and because of that I got blacklisted by these same publications that I used to write for. So you're 110% right. I was, and I did think that was right until I got my ass handed to me, which is why I'm doing it right now.
Dude, I hear you, but it's so hard to do it right. It's so hard to go from 12,000 to 120,000 legitimately, organically. It's like sounds impossible almost. Like, how does a guy do it?
Yeah. I don't know. I can tell you.
Yeah. I just see all these people with all this stuff, with all these numbers, which you need the numbers to get to the influencers, but without buy-in, how do you get to the numbers? I mean, it's a tough gig, man. And I have resolved myself on social, and I know we're only on number two of your list here, but I've resolved myself on social that said, I'm going to play social my way. I'm going to push out educational content that I like, that I think is beneficial, that I think is meaningful, and we're going to see if we can capture a certain tribe. But I also know that that methodology is the slowest, hardest way to become of some meaning on social.
And I'm glad you said that, because I do want to clarify, like, I'm a big fan of shortcuts. Big fan of shortcuts.
Dude, I can see it in your eyes. You like the shortcuts. I'm telling you, I can see it. I don't like shortcuts, but I see it. You got a little twinkle in your eye, like you kind of like the shortcuts.
Oh, man, big fan of shortcuts. I hated the fact that my dad would make me cut the weeds outside with a weed cutter walking, when it would have been a lot easier if I could have just used a weed cutter and drove that thing. But because he wanted to show me morals or ethics or whatever it was, that I had to do it that way. I'm a big fan of shortcuts. If not, I would have went 4 years of my life going to college doing that route, because it was the traditional way to go. It's the way you got to learn hard work. My dad instilled that I had to work out in the fields, because he wanted to instill the empathy for me.
What kind of fields are you talking about?
Like picking cherries, working in a factory.
Was that what your father did?
Stuff of that sort. Yeah, he did that. And he wanted me to do that so I can feel, for other people. How difficult it was and that hard work. But to me, it's like, I don't have to do that to understand that's not what I want to do for the rest of my life. I don't have to do that to understand that I'm going to feel for people, that I'm going to still help out people. So for me, I'm a big fan of shortcuts. Why do you have to climb the corporate ladder? To me, that's a waste of time.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm just, what you're talking about there is, we're in total congruence on that. The path of life doesn't have to follow someone else's. But, there is on this buying and growing followers like that. It's just too damn inauthentic to me to really go that route. And it's very, very, very difficult. And I think sometimes it takes away the energy and the excitement to do it.
Yeah.
But that's just who I am. Let's keep going, though. Number two was social. We got TV, podcast, and radio left.
Next thing would be podcasts.
Okay.
Because you could do a lot of those. You could do them in person. And then TV would probably be next, and then radio probably last.
Last. Yep, I got it. So most people don't have the money for TV. Most people don't have the money for podcast. The print is pretty much free. Mm-hmm. If you're good, the one thing I learned from Stueman, I learned a lot from Stueman. You know, that son of a gun's been to jail twice.
Yeah.
Like big time house jail. And he and I have talked about it on the podcast before, but could you imagine, once is bad enough, but he had to go back twice? Could you imagine going back to the big house twice?
Nope. I would not survive there.
It's unbelievable, that story, man. I don't think he tells that. I told him too. I'm like, dude, I don't think you tell that story. He's like, why would I want to tell that story? I'm like, because it's like you're one of so few people that have done what you've done coming from where you came from. It's just, to me, it's just incredibly compelling, that story.
Yeah.
It's unreal. But most people don't have the ability to do it. Now, he says you got to be a great writer. He says you've got to train yourself to be a great writer.
He's been writing. He writes, like, because I paid, he's another mentor of mine. Like, I paid $25,000 just to learn from him. He writes all the time.
He does.
For Facebook, mm-hmm. for his blogs, for his emails.
His Facebook posts are like long,
long
form,
Facebook posts, and he does like 2 to 3 a day.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So he's definitely trained that part of himself where he's constantly pumping out content.
Yeah.
But because of that, he makes a lot of his money from his Facebook group. Right? Because he's posting content, he's sharing the blog articles, he's doing all that type of stuff daily, because he's getting inbound leads from it.
Yeah. No, he's awesome. I'm a huge fan of what Ryan Stueman does, because of the consistency that he showed for the length of time that he showed it.
Yeah. You know?
Let's move on to the next one here, which is crafting the personal message. We talked about it a little bit. Do you think someone's got to have an edgy opinion?
No.
You do not.
But you have to have an angle. So it doesn't have to be
Love
edgy.
That. Dude, that could be another tagline for you. Opinion not needed, angle required.
Mm.
I love that.
That's very good,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, cool. Angle. Got it. So give me an idea how you craft an angle.
So, yeah, I've gotten really good at it just because we've done this for so long already and for so many people. But in reality, like a lot of people will say, like, oh, you know, I haven't done anything. I'm not worthy of being, you know, featured or anything like that. But all you have to do is find an angle that fits in with a certain contributor, really. And that's and then after you find that angle, then you can come up with a storyline. So, like, it doesn't have to be specifically on you need more money if you're talking about growing a business, but you can then definitely tie in your book.
I'll give you an example of that got me a little attention, but not a lot of attention,
yeah.
Was I did a radio show. I did ABC Radio or Market Watch, I'm not sure which, on
okay.
my book. And I told them that everybody needs to save 40% of their income.
Yep.
And they took that angle and they ran with it. And then other papers picked it up and even started to do editorials on how crazy my opinion that you have to save 40%. And the comments started to go crazy with all the haters saying, who is this lunatic? And then something like New Zealand or something published an entire article that said, in quotations, finance guru says you have to save 40% of your income, and blasted me for it. Now, that was smart because it got some attention.
Yeah.
And by the way, I do believe that. I'd fight to the death that 40% of savings is the number. But I never leveraged it.
So let me tell you, actually, I heard that from you. I learned that from you. And because of that, like Nathan knows as well, 40% of my income will go straight to savings.
Yeah.
So appreciate that.
You're welcome, dude. It is. The reason that most people have to do it, you guys are the exception to that rule on that. The reason most people have to go to 40% is because they save nothing in their 20s and they save
yep.
nothing in their 30s. And so they're behind in their 40s. That's why it's got to be bigger numbers. In your 20s, it doesn't have to be 40. So if you're doing that, you're way ahead. By the way, savings isn't really the right term. It's really reserve. To be deployed in the next round of influencer status where the deals begin to come your way. And
yeah.
without the cash, you can't take advantage of it. So congratulations, and I appreciate it. But that's the storyline of how that whole thing started to pop up. And the problem is I probably had an angle that I should have exploited, but we don't know what the hell we're doing around here.
We're putting equipment.
Billy knows what he's doing, but as far as what I know, I don't know anything. I'm an equipment finance guy, man. This is all like a... This is a game.
Yeah.
So what could we have done differently on that?
Turned
it over to my PR people and said, take
100%.
This and run with it?
If you already know that's working and other people are doubling down on that,
yeah.
Oh, man, then you could have fought that. You could have fought
Maybe
that.
Maybe we still could.
Yeah, you probably still can, because I've seen you talk to Grant. I've seen you
yeah.
talk to Grant about that. And I've also heard you talk about it as well. I think it's a great idea. So
it's a little controversial. A lot of people don't like it.
Yeah, definitely controversial. But
isn't that the angle?
Yeah, because, like, for example, for me, the angle when I get on these podcasts and stuff is, like, my thing is I want to be the guy where, like, people see me in the same light as you, as Ed, as, like, you know, Grant and all that, but in a younger version.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to be that person at a younger time.
So
like, that's my angle.
Let me ask you this. Do you have to tell the other side the angle, or should you leave it as a guess? Because doesn't everybody have an angle?
Everybody has an angle, yeah, pretty much. And can you explain a little bit more on like
should look, I don't really think I have much of an angle anymore. I think in the beginning I had more of an angle, which I think hurt me, because what is your angle? Is it a Matt Monero brand? Is it a commercial fleet brand?
Right.
What is this angle? What are you trying to accomplish with it? Right.
Yeah.
And now my angle is pretty straightforward, that through Business Finishing School, I want to help 25 million businesses fix their broken, shitty businesses.
Yeah.
And the beautiful part about Business Finishing School, if there is an angle, is that every year, hundreds of thousands of shitty businesses are created. In other words, I have a built-in
sure.
client base.
Sure.
Right? And so if I have that angle, should I say to people, that's my angle? The reason I'm doing Business Finishing School is because I want to help fix broken businesses, and I know that lots of new broken businesses are going to be started, or should I just stop it? I want to fix broken businesses.
You could do both, because I know for myself, I have no problem of like telling that other side. And when you said that, it's true. Like tons and tons of businesses are being created, and they suck.
And really what we want to do with Business Finishing School, to really tell the angle of Business Finishing School, is we want to go to like LegalZoom and say every time a new business is created, thousands of times a day on LegalZoom, we want you to give 2 free modules of Business Finishing School to that person.
That'd be so epic, yeah.
And so that if they like the modules, then they begin to enroll in the program, and that becomes our feeder system, our funnel system.
Yeah.
Right? So would that be an angle to LegalZoom? Would I say, let me tell you what, here's what I think, because I don't want to belabor the point, but it's so important to me for transparency.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Should you say to LegalZoom, hey, this is the angle? Or should we just say we want to help your clients with a value-added proposition of 2 free videos to Business Finishing School?
That's a tough one.
Well, they might be like, well, no shit, Sherlock. Of course you want them to enroll after they watch the two. I mean, we all, because doesn't everybody kind of, like, that's my point about all you guys. You guys are so much smarter than I was when I was your age. You guys all get the angle. Everybody in this room gets the angle. You guys have seen it coming for the last 6, 7, 8 years. You're already really warmed up, like, what's the angle, right? Don't you guys see it?
Yeah.
I didn't know what that was early on in my career. I never knew that everybody had it. I didn't know that everybody was in it for themselves. I didn't know that. So everybody's got an angle. You guys just sort of, it's almost like a known for your generation. Is that reasonable, guys? Yeah. Well, let's get back to it, all right? I don't know. I don't know whether it's a, I don't know whether it's appropriate to tell everybody what the angle is. But it is important for everybody listening to understand everybody's got an angle. So smarten up and figure it out.
Yeah.
You know? All right. Let's go back to outrageous, right? Do you have to be outrageous? Do you have to be tatted up? Do you have to be funky hairdo? Do you have to drive Lambos? I mean, how important is outrageous to get attention?
Yeah, that's a great question, and especially now, a ton of people are doing that, right? The Lambos, the mansions,
the planes.
The planes, yeah, the private jets. The
calling out, like this one guy, Kevin something or other on YouTube, he's always filling up my feed. He's like after Cardone, trying to expose Cardone for some bullshit.
And that's his way. Yeah,
that's his angle, yep. and that's his outrageousness.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
By the way, I think it's the most deplorable way of trying to get attention for yourself is trying to insult or damage somebody else. It's the cheapest way of trying to do it because everybody gets that angle.
I agree 110%. Like even, you know, when a rapper died, I think it was like Post Malone, there's people saying like, you know, oh, it should have been this rapper or something like that, just so they can get retweets, yeah, likes and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And they do it for that clout, like trying to get that attention. But that's a very shitty way to get attention, right? Like
it does work, man. It's following trend, it's following headlines, it does work.
It does work. And I agree with you on that. So it is, and a ton of people are doing it. So that's why I feel like I like to align, or I like to look up to people that kind of aren't in that situation, just because I can be a part of the problem as well. Like the same way I helped out that fraud in, you know, in the beginning, I can contribute to that. So I can contribute to the fake news.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know if that's a plus or a minus for you, though. I don't know. I mean, because part of your job is to recognize the angle and exploit for on behalf of your customer.
Well, okay. So I'm glad we're touching on that too. So to me, PR is organized truth. So so just because we're positioning it in a way to position you however you want to be positioned, does not mean it's fake. It's just amplified.
Yeah, I got it. It's sort of like when Bill Clinton said, it depends what your definition of is. I think PR is a little bit along those lines, too. There is a thread of truth,
yeah,
in which storylines get added to it to grab attention for it.
Right. Yeah, and that's more on the clickbaity side, where like they're trying to grab attention so,
yeah,
they can you know, get it to the masses and all that type of stuff. But the way that we do PR when we used to do the publication side of it, just articles, we would never do it to get thousands of, or you know, millions of views on an article. Our thing was like, okay, how are you going to leverage this? Because, you know, just because the publications get millions of page views every month does not mean you will get a million page views, right, on your article.
Right.
Chances are you'll probably get a few thousand if you're lucky.
I think what you're saying there, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that once there is truth and a reasonable story, you almost have a responsibility to help the person tell it.
Right, in the right way.
In
that
the right
helps
way.
Them, that benefits them, because they don't know how to do that.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, that's exactly what it is. It's very hard to unpack that expertise. The person who did do it really usually doesn't have a great ability to twist it and turn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. All right, cool. Let's go as we come closer to the end here, but let's finish on tricks of the trade.
Cool.
What can anybody do based on your expertise that can, it's what everyone isn't doing, and you're like, well, it's really the reason you're in business, right? Because you're like, you know, I'm doing what you're not doing, and you could do it. What are a couple of those?
A couple of things is being in the same room as people like you, people like the top people. And I'm not saying, you know, being in the room, same room so I can take a picture and then, you know, post that, be like, oh, I met, you know, this so-and-so or whatever. But I'm talking about when, like, a big part of our strategy when we have clients is, okay, make a dream 10 to 20. And the reason for that is because you want to find out if they have a book.
Could you repeat that again? I missed that.
Yeah, so when we work with our clients, PR is not just publications. It's not just podcasts. It's not just, you know, it's exposure in general. And one of the best ways, like we talked about it with Ed Milet, the reason he started off great is because he started off with those people. Yeah. So we advise our clients to make a dream 10-20. And the 10-20 reason for that,
people, you mean?
Yeah, 10-20
okay,
people
gotcha.
That they want to collaborate with, that they want to do work
Got
for.
It.
And then what we do is we find the angle, the same way we find an angle for publications, we find an angle and in on how they can work with that person.
So you know who's doing an amazing job with that is Albert Preciado.
Okay, yeah, I don't know.
You know, he just did the Driven event in California in Beverly Hills a couple weeks ago. I mean, he has done an amazing job of making sure that he is surrounding himself and putting himself in the right, fishing in the right pond, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, it's a game changer.
Mm.
Right. If I'm with, you know, a huge influencer and I'm with many of them over the course of time, naturally, I'm just going to be in that same circle. And the big people, they hang out in the same space.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You see them hang out in the same space. Andy, Cole Hatter, like all of them, they mingle. Right.
Mm.
And they influence. They give off that rub effect and that influence off of each other.
Did you call it rub effect?
Yeah.
That's
rub
awesome.
Effect, yeah.
Dude, that's a good one. OK, got it. So number one, put yourself in the right pond.
Yes.
Get yourself in an environment in which you can have tentacles in. You're not just this no name. You're actually, oh, yeah, I remember you. Got it. What else can somebody do?
Another thing is once you find out, you need to know exactly who it is that you want to become. After you know that, then the easiest thing to do to gain that credibility, to gain that leverage, is to get on those print articles, those blogs, maybe not the big places because that's a little harder to do now, and even back then it was very hard to do, but you have to get on the smaller places where you can have three things. Ease of acceptance, that means if you ever submit something, it'll be easily accepted. Two, speed, you want to make sure you're not waiting 2 to 3 months for an article to come out. And then three, control. You want to be able to control exactly what gets put in the headline, the picture, and what gets said in the article, because then you can control what people think about you if you can control what they see about you.
Yeah.
So those,
love that.
You're looking for like those three things on small publications, small articles. So whenever you come to a big person or whenever you come to a big publication or podcast, you have that leverage. They will give you the time of day because of what you built already. You have those foundational pieces.
Mm. So. Give me one more, buddy, because I love those first two.
Something that somebody can easily do, show swaps. So I've seen a lot of people, podcasting is becoming big just because they get to connect with the big influencers, right? And then they get to do show swaps with people that are on the same level as them in podcast-wise or whatever. And because of that, they again, the rub-off effect. They gain influence from each other. So if you have a specific podcast for a specific thing, then you can interview top people in their space. Like, for example, 4 years ago, I helped a buddy of mine. He was like 18 at the time. Or, sorry, he was like 17 at the time. Get a contributor platform on the Huffington Post. And he was doing e-commerce at the time. So if he wanted to learn e-commerce from the top people in the space, all he had to do was ask them for an interview. The same concept applies with podcasting. So if you're doing something completely different and you need coaching, you don't have to pay $10,000. All you have to do is ask somebody at the top, hey, we'd love to interview you, ask them the questions that you're struggling with, and then get that high-level coaching from that person for free.
Dude, that's the whole reason I do this podcast, is to help myself get better as well. I mean, it's nice to push out content that benefits others, but I always pick guests that are of interest to me that can teach me.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you're saying. The weird thing is this swap, because almost nobody that I've had on my podcast has swapped with me.
Really?
Almost nobody. And I've had some pretty big names, right? Almost nobody has swapped out. And you know whose fault it is? Mine. Because I didn't say, I'll have you on my podcast if you have me on yours.
Yeah. Yeah, see, well, yeah. Because when we work with you know, some of our clients and stuff like that, and when we go pitch somebody, they'll be like, sure. You know, if we can get them, if you can do the same thing for us. right? They'll openly say that. So show swaps are definitely like a thing.
Well, I had one guy who reached out to me. We share the same publisher in Penguin. And I know this guy.
Yeah.
And he reached out to me and said, hey, my new book is coming out. I think it was last month. He said, my new book's coming out. Would you do me a favor and promote it into your email list? And I said, I'd be happy to. You'll reciprocate, right? And he said, I'm afraid I can't.
Mm.
And I said, screw you, man. The hell's the matter with you? Asking me to do you a favor and you won't do me a favor? Hell no, I won't send it into my list.
Yeah.
How often does that happen where you try to do the swap and the person says, you're not big enough for me to swap with you?
Right, so it doesn't happen very often. So when that happened to you, I was like, what the heck? Like, so to me, I was like, you know what? Like,
You're right. That was the second denial I got in the last couple of weeks, was the first story I just told you, but then I forgot about the guy that denied me through you.
And to me, that was a shocker.
But he wouldn't even come on mine, let alone swap with me and have me come on him.
Right,
That was different. The other guy was asking me for a favor,
and
but
then
he
not
wouldn't
reciprocating.
Return. Yeah, one I missed on the first side. So again, what you don't think the swap is turned down too often?
I don't see it often. I don't see it often in the space that I'm in and when we're doing work and stuff like that. So when that happened, it was a shocker to me, and I wanted to make sure like you were pretty much compensated for the time and for the hope that I had given you, because I did when I approached that person, I told them about the show swap.
Yeah,
which is
I'm gonna tell you who does it better than anybody is Cardone.
Cardone,
he is so open to that swap. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, he just has created a machine that says, I want to produce content, and therefore, if someone has this angle, this message, I want them to have the ability to talk about it. He has been so gracious to so many people, and so many other people are so protective of that.
Yeah.
And I think it's a shame.
You just gave me a great idea.
What you got?
Well, about the show swap with Grant. So, I just found my end now.
Mm.
Right, so that's perfect. So, after this, I'm probably going to go ahead and email his team. So, we'll see what happens.
Well, haven't you been on with him before?
No, I haven't been on. I haven't been on Power Players yet.
Oh, no kidding.
I've gotten clients on Power Players, but
dude, you just call their office and they'll schedule. I mean, you'll probably have to schedule it out. I mean, he's like, the last time I was down there, he was so gracious with my book.
Yeah,
it was so unbelievably gracious in helping promote the book. And when I was there to do Power Players, it was second Power Players I did with him, but this was just for the book. I'm not kidding you, dude. Like, every 30 minutes, there was another group of people. It has become like the Mecca in Miami, his office.
Wow.
It is unbelievable how many people travel from around the world every day to come and say thanks to him for his books and his content or to ask him for things. He's incredibly gracious about that. And I try to be gracious about it too. The last thing I'm doing is going looking at somebody's Instagram followers and stuff to determine, are they worthy to be in my presence? I just want to know, do I think we can have an interesting conversation?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's genuine.
I want to be unbelievably genuine about all of it. And like we talked about when I gave you the tour of the office, it's because I was so disingenuous for so much of my career, and that comes from a place of lack.
Yeah.
Dude, I just had to get my piece of the American pie, and I didn't care how I did it. I didn't want to screw anybody along the way, but I wasn't about giving. I was just about taking. And if there's one message I'd like to get across today to the audience, and I think you and your team totally get this, is that you gotta lead with more giving.
Yeah.
There is not much room for takers in the world anymore. There's endless, bountiful room for the givers. And I just learned that, dude. I'm not shitting you. I learned that in the last 4 or 5 years of my life. I'm 49 years old, and I just figured that shit out. And when I did, everything got better.
Yeah.
You know? How can I help you?
That's
what can
powerful.
I do for you? How can I help you? What can I help you? Not what's in it for me. What can I do for you? How can I swap? How can I assist you? How can I help you? What's the problem that you need help with? How can I be of service to you? You know who's best at that? Dave Meltzer. You know Dave Meltzer?
Yes.
He's
a massive giver.
Yep.
Massive.
He's unbelievable, that guy. All right, my friend. Any parting words to our audience on public relations? Because it's a really It's a difficult thing for people to get right. That's why I think you have a tremendous opportunity to be the number one in this space that your desire is, because number one, you got a lot of shitty competition, and number two,
true,
it's a little bit hard. It's kind of hard to really get that formula right. But when you do, you know, there, and you also have these outlets that have insatiable desires for content.
Yes. Yeah. They've grown because of that, because they've allowed contributors, because, and now they're like monetizing it and all that type of stuff too now. So they definitely understand, like, they're making a lot more money if they have more people on, if they have more views and more content and clicks, and which is why they're allowing it, but it's also very strict. So you just have to find that balance.
All right, big guy. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today. I appreciate you. There's only one thing left to do. That's you got to sign my booth, all right?
I'm so down for that, yeah.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Cool. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. I appreciate you being on the show. I'll see you down the road.
It's our episode this week with your host, Matt Monero. Check us out every Friday at 12 p.m. Central as we discuss money, your life, and how you need more money.